What kind of regulations do you think should be put in place?
I mean, the first thing I would like to see is sort of a blanket ban on any banks or other sort of institutional financial players getting into the crypto space. I think that's critical.
Cryptocurrencies have grabbed news headlines with their dramatic highs and lows, and their proponents argue they could revolutionize the financial system, making it faster and fairer. But could this cryptocurrency craze be dragging us all into some dangerous waters?
What I'm concerned about is that's happening on a global scale, and you know, nations that are the most vulnerable being the place where these assets are finally sold into, so that profits the people who are running the industry and potentially harms, you know, the most vulnerable people in the world. I'm Hillary Allen. I am a professor of law at the Washington College of Law at American University.
Hillary Allen is also the author of The Superficial Allure of Crypto, an article published in the September issue of Finance and Development magazine. Journalist Rhoda Metcalf sat down with Professor Allen to learn more.
Cryptocurrencies are often touted as being a more democratic alternative to the traditional financial system. What do you say to that argument?
So I disagree with it. I think if there's one thing that the proponents of crypto have right, it is the critique of our existing system. There are problems in financial inclusion for our existing system. The problem is crypto doesn't solve them. There is nothing in crypto that really makes it a better solution for people who need cheaper, faster payments. And really what people need is something simple. They don't need complicated bells and whistles where they have to be able to understand computer code as well as complex disclosures to understand what they're acquiring. That's not the right solution for financial inclusion. And I worry that the financial inclusion narrative is being used as sort of a screen to hide what we call predatory inclusion. So we heard this kind of rhetoric as well way back with the subprime mortgages, where they said this was going to, you know, bring homeownership to people who'd previously been excluded. But in the end, people were being exploited. And I'm very concerned that this crypto area is exploitative as well.
So you don't see it as opening up financial opportunities to people who at this point, you know, don't really have access to the traditional financial system?
No, because you have to think about, you know, what do these people actually need, right? You need to start with the problem. So people may need capital in the first place. To get a loan in crypto, you have to already have crypto and stake that crypto for the loan. So that's not going to bring new financial services to people who don't already have capital. You know, if you need to be able to make payments quickly, you don't want to have to go through exchanges who are going to charge you significantly to convert your fiat into crypto and then back again. So the crux of all of this is that these crypto assets, with the exception of some stablecoins, have nothing behind them.
There's no actual money, there's no gold, there's nothing behind.
And not even that. There's not even any productive capacity. Like if you buy a share in a corporation, you know, they make something or they build something or they sell something, you know, there is plant, there are employees, et cetera. And if that corporation were to fail, then you could liquidate everything and, you know, you might not get much for your share, but there's something there. Whereas most crypto assets have nothing behind them. And so their value is entirely dependent on someone else being willing to buy that asset from you. And so the concern is that this financial inclusion narrative is really just trying to find more people to buy these assets to prop up their price. And if it all fails, they'll be the people left holding the bag.
But isn't this the idea of the cryptocurrency, the idea of exchange? You know, I need some, so I give you some. It's just a circulation of money. I mean, isn't that part of the concept?
That was the initial idea behind Bitcoin, that you could use it to pay for things. But it turned out that Bitcoin and, you know, many coins like it turned out to be a terrible payments mechanism because it was so volatile, right? You know, if you went to the store and eggs were worth 15 bitcoins today, 27 bitcoins the next day, and 3 bitcoins the next, that's no way to run a system. And so it really never took off as a type of payment for that reason. But people were attracted to the volatility as the price started to increase. So people did start to acquire it as an investment.
And what about this idea of decentralization? I mean, there's this notion that cryptocurrencies are very decentralized because they're sort of run by blockchains of data instead of people, right? But you say that inevitably these currencies end up being controlled by a small number of people. How does that happen?
So let's be realistic about all of this. People are making a lot of money in this space. There has to be someone to make the money, right? You know, that this idea of a system where the computer code controls everything, who programs that code? Who profits from programming that code? There are intermediaries all over the place in this space. They're just often hidden and often unregulated. So, you know, when people are talking about what they call DeFi or decentralized finance, they're often talking about, you know, apps that live on a particular underlying blockchain. And those apps are often said to be decentralized. But who created them in the first place, right? They often have a lot of control over how the apps work.
The founders.
Yeah. And then sometimes they'll say, well, we've given away governance to all the holders. We'll say we will issue governance tokens and they'll make the decisions. But you look at the concentration of wealth in this space and most of the governance tokens are in the hands of the founder or their VC funders, etc.
Now, these people they call whales, right? The ones who have a very big block of the currency.
Yeah, the crypto whales. So you might think that you are participating in some democratized finance because you own a governance token, but you know, you don't think you can control Apple just because you own a share in Apple. It's the same thing. You know, the big holders are still calling the shots.
Right. You know, we've seen how volatile cryptocurrencies can be, but do they pose other problems beyond that?
Sure. So the volatility for individuals is what we call like an investor protection or a consumer protection problem. And there are others of those as well. So, for example, there have been so many hacks and scams in this space, and they come in on a daily basis. So, you know, that's an investor protection problem as well.
Is that because it's not well protected?
Well, it's because...
Or it's just the nature of the beast.
Well, I think a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B, right? There's not any quality control on the software code for these assets, right? So that makes them vulnerable to hacks in a way that, you know, a lot of traditional finance, you know, banks invest heavily in cybersecurity protections in a way that a lot of these tokens don't. And some of them are outright fraud. Sometimes the founders are the ones stealing from people. So, you know, you can never make software completely safe. And you see that there are still cyber attacks on big banks that invest heavily, but the degree is different.
And are there other concerns that you have with the sort of fundamentals of it?
Yeah, sure. I mean, if we get beyond the investor protection concerns, there are concerns about cybercrime. So ransomware attacks have sort of grown up with the growth of crypto. Basically, I think it's a symbiotic relationship. There are environmental concerns. For example, the process of validating Bitcoin transactions, which is known as mining, uses as much energy as the entire country of the Philippines or the Netherlands. And then there's, you know, my particular area of expertise is I do financial stability regulation, which is like, are these things going to blow up into a financial crisis that hurt not just the people who've invested in them, but people who have never paid any attention to them and never invested in them? And so the point I made about subprime mortgages before, the analogy there, I think is very relevant. You know, those were predatory inclusion that hurt the individuals who had the mortgages, but they were also incorporated into the broader financial system in a way that hurt all of us. Right. And so I think the most critical thing is to keep crypto out of the traditional financial system, because that would be a channel for it to harm not just the investors, but all of the people in our society.
Because of its destabilizing potential.
Yeah. So, I mean, financial systems become more fragile when they're more rigid, when they lose flexibility. And when you have these self-executing smart contracts that don't leave much room for intervention, things become more rigid. Financial systems become more fragile when they become more complex, when they have unnecessary complexity. And what we're getting here is financial services we already had done in a much more convoluted manner to try and preserve some illusion of decentralization, but then we're not even getting the decentralization. And then a lot of people have talked about the capacity of stablecoins to be vulnerable to runs in the same way that we see runs on bank accounts and money market mutual funds. So all of those issues sort of packaged together raise concerns about financial stability for me if this stuff is integrated into the mainstream financial system.
Right. So are we seeing efforts to regulate cryptocurrencies? I mean, are there concerns? Do other people besides yourself have a lot of concerns about this?
So there are definitely efforts to regulate cryptocurrency coming, and the crypto industry is lobbying very heavily for certain kinds of regulation. And there's a Bloomberg report that came out a few months ago that said that the amount of money spent lobbying by crypto industry has eclipsed the defense industry. So there's a lot of money and attention going into Washington on this. And so I wouldn't say the crypto industry is against regulation. They're trying to craft regulation that works for them. So I think
which is not surprising.
No, it's not surprising. It's not surprising at all. But it also is incumbent upon people who understand this stuff, who don't have a vested interest in or financial interest in the industry, to sort of push back where the industry is trying to craft regulatory proposals that aren't a good fit for the public benefit.
What kind of regulation do you think should be put in place? Can you explain that for us?
I mean, the first thing I would like to see is sort of a blanket ban on any banks or other sort of institutional financial players getting into the crypto space. I think that's critical. I then think that application of the existing securities laws to crypto will also do a lot of the job. And so a lot of people were frustrated that the SEC had not taken that much action in this space. Unfortunately, I think the way the legal system works is that it takes some time to ramp up an enforcement capacity. And we're starting to see the fruits of the SEC's efforts. So for the last couple of months.
And the SEC is?
The Securities and Exchange Commission. And so they administer securities laws. So we've seen an aggressive enforcement effort from them over the last few months trying to crack down on some of the problems. So I think that's a welcome development. And that, I think, coupled with a regime that kept it out of banks in particular would get us most of the way to where we need to be.
Right. So do you think we're moving in the right direction then?
So I think the SEC is moving in the right direction. The actual legislative proposals that I've seen, I do not think are moving in the right direction, because what they're trying to do is often create bespoke or light touch regulatory regimes for crypto that essentially carve it out often of the SEC's securities enforcement. And that is not the way to go.
They're trying to sort of get an exception to the rule and claim that there's some special case.
Because, again, decentralization is the claim. And as I've already bored everybody with at length, it's not decentralized. So, I don't think this is a place that deserves a bespoke regulatory regime.
Okay. Finally, more recently, we have seen sort of an explosion of central banks trying to develop their own cryptocurrencies. Is this the future? I mean, are cryptocurrencies inevitably, you know, in our future, whether we like it or not?
So I think that these CBDCs, these central bank digital currencies, are a really interesting phenomenon. And frankly, I think behind the scenes, a lot of the central banks are frankly not that interested in these and feel that they have to show that they're considering it. But they don't really do anything that can't already be done with existing technologies. So in many ways, it's sort of what I've heard it described as FOMO, fear of missing out, right?
But I mean, is none of this also in response to the fact that, you know, the popularity or the interest in these cryptocurrencies, like, you know, the idea of giving people an alternative that is like a cryptocurrency but is more stable?
Well, I mean, I think that it comes down to the fact that people aren't looking for this stuff to make payments, right? They never really have been. It's never taken off as a payments mechanism. So I don't think people really are looking to crypto for that. They're looking to crypto to get rich quick, frankly. You know, it is a way of speculating, and that's where the interest has come from. It's never been about payments, which again, I think undermines this idea that we need a central bank digital currency.
Okay. Well, Hillary Allen, I really appreciate you taking us down into this the wild world of cryptocurrencies and giving us a much clearer understanding of how it all works. Thank you for speaking on the podcast today.
It's a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Hillary Allen is a professor of law at the Washington College of Law at American University in Washington, D.C. She was speaking with Rhoda Metcalf. You can read her article on the superficial allure of crypto at imf.org/FND. And look for other IMF podcasts on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Bruce Edwards.
And I'm Rhoda Metcalf. Thanks for listening.